opens up the doorway to hope, throws it wide open to hope. And that's the work that every one of us can do. And it's our hope and our prayer that for every one of us, that we understand the importance of living in peace. Working in peace is not a moment, it's a lifetime, it's a culture, it's a style. It throws away such things as shaming and blaming, but lifts up the opportunity for people to come together and work together. Thank you so much, everybody, for being here. We're grateful for your time. We pray that your day ends and begins every day in peace. Thank you. Shalom.
That was an excerpt from a press conference held this morning by the Portland Interfaith Peace and Action Collaborative. They marked the International Day of Peace with the announcement of their Portland Peace Initiative. The group will be holding listening sessions with people in community groups for them to voice how they want to be served by the police. We heard Pastor J.W. Matt Hennessy, Lisa Broderick, former Oregon State Senator Avil Gordley, and Keith Edwards. A link to find more information on the listening sessions can be found on our website, kbu.fm. I'm Althea Billings. This has been KBU News In Depth. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO every Friday at 6 p.m. from September 15th to October 15th for KBOO's Hispanic Heritage Month series. Join KBOO in celebrating and paying tribute to the contributions and enriching influences of Hispanic and Latinx Americans and their ancestors. You'll hear from volunteer producers from Buscando America, Boogie Pachanguero, Noticias en Español, and more. Again, that's KBOO's Hispanic Heritage Month series, every Friday at 6 p.m. from September 15th to October 15th, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
It is the KBOO Fall Drive, and our theme is the sounds of democracy. Everything you hear on KBOO is, in its own way, the sound of democracy because we are a community radio station. Community radio is one of the most democratic types of media. We're non-commercial and independent. We're supported by our members so that we can keep the airwaves democratic, and continue to bring you the valuable voices of your community. Democracy is an experiment, and so is community radio. We're featuring content focused on democracy itself and democratic ideas across the schedule this drive, so if you'd like to support us, please visit us at kbu.fm/give or by clicking donate in the mobile app or mail to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
Hi, my name is Emma, and you're listening to Trans Positive here on KBOO Community Radio. I use she and her pronouns.
I'm Jean, and I also use she and her.
And I'm Anna, and I use she, her pronouns as well.
Great, thank you. So we're here tonight with Anna at, is it Your Lessons Now?
Yes.
Great, and Anna does vocal training for trans, non-binary people, and well, tell us a little bit about what you do, Anna.
Sure. So I'm the director of Your Lessons Now. We're a multi-state online and in-person music school that specializes in offering vocal training for the transgender community, as well as singing and instrument lessons if people are interested in music as well.
Oh, great. And it's you've got a pretty big space over here in Vancouver.
Yeah, we definitely do. We got 8 rooms.
That's neat. Nice. If you could tell us a little about your organization, like how did you get started with vocal training and how did you end up doing this?
Sure. I went to school originally to become a voice teacher and professional singer. I also earned a degree in healthcare. And so I've been teaching voice with a focus on transgender vocal training and some other niche areas of voice technique and voice pedagogy since about 2013. I ended up starting this organization wanting to expand how much reach I could have beyond what one person is capable of by themselves in 2018. And since then, we've grown to having schools here in Vancouver, Washington. We have one in San Antonio, Texas. And we have about 50 employees in about a dozen states.
Wow, that's
amazing. Oh my goodness.
That's so incredible. Congratulations.
Thanks.
On your good work. So let's start with the basics, because there's going to be a lot of people who are listening right now who don't even know why we're talking about this. So let's start with what, if you could, like, would it be all right if first I asked you your coming out story? Would you be willing to share your coming out story?
Sure. So I knew I was female from as early as I had conscious thought that I can remember. I ended up coming out at age 26. That was back in June of 2018. Since then, I have undergone the vast majority of medical transition that I want to do personally. And with that, I was a little bit unsure of my sexuality as hormones started affecting me, but I would say at this point that I'm bisexual.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Do you have any questions, Jane?
Yes, I do. You know, you mentioned just a moment ago that you have somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 employees in multiple states.
Yes.
Are you, you know, employing other trans folks? What kind of percentage of your, you know, employees are trans identified?
I would say that roughly 50% of our employees are transgender themselves in some way, shape, or form. And I would say about 75-80% are somehow a part of the greater LGBT community.
Yay. I think this is wonderful. It's one of the things that, as an activist, I've, you know, thought for years that one of the best things we can do for ourselves in terms of addressing some of our, you know, socio-political, economic issues is start businesses. Start businesses and employ each other.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, I'm working on two more.
What a great example. This is just glorious. It's wonderful. Congratulations.
Sure.
Neat. What are your other businesses you're working on?
My wife and I are going to start an aesthetics and electrolysis business when she finishes school and apprenticing, so that we can have more people that are a part of the larger queer and specifically transgender community offering hair removal for transition, along with other services that can be awkward to seek out amongst the cis, like waxing or skin care, you know, things of that nature.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This is wonderful. This is wonderful. That, you know, it's something that folks in my age bracket, you know, have, you know, wished we had for years. Thank you.
Sure.
So again, we're talking tonight with Anna Lantry with Your Lessons Now. Anna is a vocal coach for trans and non-binary folks. I'd like to get back to your transition story for a minute, and just first I'd like to ask, so before you transitioned, were you already doing voice? Were you already doing vocal?
Yes, I was for several years.
And what is your background in that? Is that something that you received higher education in?
Yes, I have a bachelor's in vocal performance, and I did additional training and study, both continuing to take independent voice lessons from the head of a major music department. I did additional training with a respiratory therapist that specialized in working with professional singers and actors. And I did additional training with a coach in what's known as the Alexander Technique.
Oh, that's great. What was your attraction to voice and to singing?
I've always liked singing a lot. It's something I started doing in choir in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I decided I wanted to really make that my profession somehow. Along the way, I also found that I liked dealing with things like finances and managing other people, and that really I was also an entrepreneur, so I was able to put the two together.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this issue. Again, like I said, there's a lot of people who may not really understand why we're even having this conversation. So I'd like to hear from both of you, like, kind of your take on the voice. Like, what is it about transition and the voice that people who don't know anything about it would like to hear from a transgender person? Why is it important to have this conversation?
So the voice that you have because of the people that have influenced you growing up and the effects of hormones on your body during your formidable years may result and combine into a voice that makes you very uncomfortable with how you sound and how other people perceive you, especially when referring to gender. You know, the conversation has often been led by cis people that it's a matter of passing. Well, that can be important to some people, and it was for me, but really it's about developing how you sound when you speak and or sing, so that you are happy with your voice. It doesn't cause you dysphoria. You like how you're perceived or how you perceive it, because you don't have to be stuck with something you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting perspective. And I think it's very enlightened, and congratulations on that. Again, I'm an older person, and so, you know, passing, okay, has been, you know, very important to me. And one of the things that I've observed over the years about our community is a lot of people spend a lot of time, a lot of resources, a lot of effort in terms of appearance. We talk a lot about, you know, documents and you know, those kinds of things. And, you know, I've known folks in our community who, you know, especially, you know, MTF trans folks who, you know, were gorgeous, you know, just gorgeous. And then the second they opened their mouth, you know, they just were like outing themselves. And it never made any sense to me. It just never made any sense to me. You know, why folks are not willing to put in the time and effort. So let's talk about the time and effort and discipline that it takes to retrain a voice that has been through specifically a male puberty.
Sure, so there is no magic bullet. There is no special pill. There is no special diet that's going to get you a more feminine voice if that's not what your genetics, hormonal changes, and behavioral mannerisms you picked up on from individuals in your life that were influential during formidable years. There's no magic anything that's going to give you that if that's not what those culminating factors have resulted in. It's going to be hard work, not unlike being a professional athlete. So you're going to want to work with someone like me who can give you regular feedback, honest feedback, but in a constructive way that you can then use to change your technique towards your goal as far as how you would rather sound, but to do it in the healthiest, most efficient, and least frustrating way possible. That also means that you need to take what you learn from someone like me, whether that's me, one of my staff, even somewhere else, whatever that may be. You have to go and apply that stuff, because it comes down to training dominant muscles, or if I do X, it comes out as Y because I do Z in my throat. You have to habituate the things that you're learning and keep working those muscles beyond just taking lessons.
So practice makes perfect.
Yes, and luckily for this, it's usually not as painful a process as some other aspects of transition can be. It can take years to remove all your facial hair, for example. I find that a couple months is usually sufficient if someone's putting in daily work between their sessions.
Oh, for voice modification?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
For speech. Singing is a longer battle.
I would imagine.
So, again, just for our listeners, for people who may not understand quite exactly what we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the biology of this.
Sure.
Of the voice. So just so people understand. And we're going to use some terms that people are probably familiar with, but they may not be familiar with. One of the terms we'll use is assigned male at birth, and we'll also use the term assigned female at birth. Is everyone okay with using those terms?
I prefer assumed.
Okay.
Personally, but that's just
great.
Me.
Okay, we'll use that then. Assumed
that
male.
That works yeah. for me.
Right, right. And so we'll use those to refer to, and if people are comfortable, we'll also use words like transgender female, transgender male. Are people okay with using those words?
Sure.
Okay, great, great. So let's start by talking about, well, I'll tell you what, let's start by talking about folks who are assigned female at birth. What is the biology of the voice for someone who's assigned female at birth, who then becomes a trans masculine person? What goes into all of that, and how does
sure.
that affect their voice?
So if estrogen touches your voice first, it does cause some deepening and thickening. Someone with a femme voice does not sound the same as a child, to kind of put that in perspective. What you do if you're a trans masculine individual and you decide that hormone therapy is going to be a part of your process is that the additional thickening and lengthening of the vocal cords and overall growth of the apparatus to be larger occurs in the same way that it would in cis men going through puberty during their formidable years. How much that changes does depend on things like genetics, how receptive you are to the therapy, how long you've been on the therapy, because it's a 5 or 6 year game for anybody, cis or not. And I think we need to keep that in mind sometimes, because it can be frustrating to like just want things to happen overnight, and unfortunately it doesn't work that way. But that gradual thickening of the vocal cords and lengthening of the structures and thickening of the other things, thickening of the muscles that control the vocal folds and the vocal apparatus, that stuff will occur, but genetics, age, receptiveness to the hormone therapy, and a little bit of luck will determine how much. So your voice probably will drop. You will start to have richer overtones in your voice. Your voice will start to lean more mask because the structure has grown larger and thicker. But that may not necessarily mean that it's as much a change in how you sound and how you are perceived when you make sound as you would like. So learning how to drive this new vehicle is still important, because also what you run into is the technique that worked for you before doesn't work anymore. So that can lead to having very decreased range, difficulty with volume control, and getting tired really, really fast.
That's so interesting. I didn't know that. So again, we're talking with Anna Lantry from Your Lessons Now in Vancouver. Anna is a transgender person who's a vocal coach and runs a business helping to teach people how to train their voice. So what we're talking about right now is we're talking first about folks who are assigned female at birth and who have gone on testosterone because they're experiencing some kind of gender dysphoria. Or whatever reason they've chosen, whatever reason is their reason, and they've gone on testosterone, which will change their voice. And like traditionally, how would you describe how testosterone changes someone who's assigned female birth? How does it change their voice?
Typically, you're gonna see a lowering of pitch, and you're gonna see an increase in overtones of the voice, because not only are you thickening and lengthening the vocal cords, the increased size of the apparatus and the lowering of it further down into the throat means you now have a longer, thicker pipe that sound is coming through and bouncing around inside of. So it changes not only the pitch, but the quality.
Okay. I have no idea what it looks like inside of there, so I'll just take your word for it.
Imagine you tap a little glass, and then you tap a bigger one. Bigger one makes a deeper, different sound. Similar thing, but it's all flesh.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, great. Okay, so that's what happens. Now, before we move on to assigned male at birth, I do want to ask a couple of things. One is, does it make a difference their age? Like, does it make a difference whether... I mean, I know that for other things that transgender people do, their age really makes a big difference.
Yes.
And so does it make a difference when someone who's assigned female at birth starts on testosterone with regard to their voice?
Yes. Generally, like other changes from hormone therapy, the correlation seems to be, and it's not an exact science, everyone's different. The short answer is you don't know what's going to happen until you're there. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, the trend seems to be that the younger you start hormone therapy, the more drastic the changes are in general with transitioning in any direction, including how much of a deepening and changing of the voice happens on T.
Okay, great. Got it. So part of what we're saying there for folks who are not into like transgender conversations is that, so for people who are assigned female at birth, the younger that they're able to start on hormone therapy, that it can make a significant difference in the quality of their voice, as well as other changes to their bodies. And this is an issue that is a real issue within the world of trans teens right now, and has been for quite a while, because technically, I don't remember exactly what the age is that you're permitted to start on hormone therapy.
It is various across states. And across nations.
Do we know what it is in Oregon and Washington?
I believe that the legal age of medical consent in Oregon is 16 years
okay.
of age.
Okay, so we're going to say that we, that's what we think, but we do not take that as legal advice.
Yeah.
So we're not absolutely sure. You need to check with your therapist, you need to check with your counselor before you go on hormones. So don't take that as legal advice. We think that's the age.
I believe that's correct.
And in Washington, do we know what the age is?
I think it may be 18 in Washington.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure about either one to any degree of certainty that I'd want anyone quoting me on it, but mm-hmm. I know that a lot of the laws as far as protections for trans individuals and consent are extraordinarily similar between the two states.
Yeah. And so what a lot of trans kids will do is they'll go on hormone blockers if they think that they're transgender, or if they know they're transgender and they've seen a therapist and they're, you know, getting counseling. They'll go on hormone blockers.
Yeah.
And the point of the hormone blockers is to kind of delay puberty.
Right.
Which affects your physical development, and apparently it also what is the effect of hormone blockers on the voice?
So what you're basically doing is you're delaying the changes that would happen if someone went through puberty until they decide which puberty they want to go through. If there are other changes, such as growing taller or an expansion in lung capacity and things like that, that might still affect the voice, and that might happen even with pubertal suppression. But ultimately, how much lengthening and thickening and changing of the vocal apparatus is going to depend on what hormones you're exposed to when.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, the general truth, because mm-hmm. everything's a bell-shaped curve.
Of course.
Okay? Everybody's going to be more or less unique. But generally speaking, while, you know, assumed female at birth individuals who start on testosterone are going to have a vocal change. That's not necessarily true. It is, in fact, generally it is not true for those of us who were assumed male at birth and transition with hormones, estrogen, does not have a parallel effect on our voices.
That is correct. You can grow the vocal structures, but you can't shrink them back. That genie doesn't go back in the bottle.
Yeah, so that's the difference between the two binary sides of this discussion.
Correct.
Okay, so just again to unpack that in case people weren't quite sure what was going on. Folks that are born, they're assigned as males, as boys. When they go through puberty, their voices, how would you describe it? Their voices deepen?
Yeah.
If your body's exposed to testosterone, whether from use of testosterone or your body producing it, whichever case may be, it's going to cause a greater lengthening and thickening and what have you than if you were primarily and only exposed to estrogen.
Right. And so what happens to those voices when they then get exposed to estrogen if they've already gone through puberty? How does estrogen do anything to those voices, or does it not have any effect?
So I haven't seen any evidence that there is a direct effect. I have heard some people speculate that it might change the texture of your vocal cords, or there might be, since there's a reduction in muscle mass everywhere, there might be a reduction of muscle mass to some extent, which would be hard to measure with how small these structures are, for those muscles that compose and surround the vocal folds. One thing I would swear that I've noticed more times than would be sufficient for me to think there's something to it is, a lot of how you sound or when you're perceived as feminine is affected by behavior. And I do feel like behavior can shift as you feel different when which hormone is in your body as dominant shifts. Mm-hmm. So you might find yourself talking in a more feminine manner because of how you feel and therefore how you behave from being on estrogen for an extended period of time. And that might have an appreciable effect, but is there actual physiological changes? If there are, they're not very significant.
Right, okay, great.
So you make an interesting point here, that there is a physiological or perhaps like mechanical.
Yeah.
Physiological, mechanical set of circumstances with the structures of our vocal folds in our throats. But that's only one piece.
Yes.
Of how a person sounds and how their voice is perceived. So it's not just pitch.
No.
There are many other aspects to a voice. Can you speak to, because you were alluding to, behavioral patterns.
Yeah.
And so there are patterns in just how we speak that affect how we are perceived.
Yeah, so you can't shrink things anatomically or physiologically without surgery, and that can be treacherous in this realm specifically. You can change how you use what you have. You can train to speak at a higher pitch and to do that in a way that's healthy and sustainable and efficient and becomes second nature to you. You can train your throat to stay narrower in a way that's still healthy and relaxed. You can train your voice box to shift to a higher position when you speak or sing and stay parked there comfortably and healthily and with stability. So you can't shrink the tube to make a more feminine sound because of hormone therapy, but you can do it through building the right dominant muscles that control the vocal apparatus. You can do that through repetition. If I speak, my voice box goes up, my throat narrows. You can shrink that tube, and again, a bigger glass makes one sound when you hit it, smaller glass makes another sound when you hit it. Well, you can make that smaller glass mechanically if you know what to do and you train it enough.
Great. So, what about people who are assumed male at birth, but who get on hormone blockers before they go through puberty? What happens to their voices when they choose what hormones, what puberty they want to go through? Let's say they choose estrogen.
If you're able to suppress testosterone-related changes and make yourself go through a primary puberty of estrogen between exogenous hormones and puberty blockers, your voice would change in a way that's not really appreciably different than a cis woman.
Oh, that's neat. Do you do any kind of vocal training for those types of transgender people?
If such a person wanted to work with us, they certainly could.
Mm-hmm.
It's very unlikely that they would need training to feminize their speaking voice.
Mm-hmm.
I would more expect to see a student like that if they wanted to work on singing, not even as a trans person, but just working on singing like any cis person,
mm-hmm.
and that they want to learn how to do it right and do it well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, just a moment ago, you were speaking about, you know, making these muscular shifts and
right.
and those kind of things in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Talk to us about what kind of damage can be done through attempting to make some of these changes in an incorrect or unhealthy way.
So if you use your voice in a way that's unhealthy, it's not going to feel good, and it's going to get worse and worse as you get more fatigued from it. So it's going to be uncomfortable to talk that way, and your voice is going to go kaput fairly fast, most likely. Another possibility is if your voice is fatigued enough or being used in a way that's treacherous to it, you can get things like polyps, where there are growths, almost like calluses on your vocal cords that can distort how you sound, make it uncomfortable to speak, make you lose stamina. You can also develop nodules, which is another thing of that sort. You can develop granulomas, and you can also get vocal hemorrhages. All of those things often require rest, treatment by a speech therapist, and or surgery, depending on which exact condition you have, how bad it is, and what your ENT feels is best to resolve it.
So which one of those did Bob Dylan have?
Bob Dylan, I'm not sure. I'd have to look at it. I know Elton John, because of performing way too much and drug use, got a bunch of polyps. And when he had those removed, that's when his voice dropped a whole bunch.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of the, you know, these non-recommended, you know, damaging approaches? What are those? I mean, how does a person?
If you try to talk as high as possible, that's not going to help with sounding feminine to yourself or others.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk or sing at the high extremes, it's very easy to do it wrong because your vocal cords are stretched so much, and you got to think, if you tighten a guitar string too much, it could. You know?
Yeah, right.
So
are we talking about, like, you know, shifting into falsetto as an example, or, you know?
Falsetto or feminine classical range, that's not what people speak in typically, unless they're doing a character or something. That would be like talking here. What's happening is your vocal cords are touching less, so it makes a totally different quality and type of sound. And people don't speak in that. People speak in that to be a character in a goofy cartoon, or people will sing in that for certain styles of music, or when they can't go any higher without doing that because they don't know how, or that's just their limits. So learning to talk in a more full voice while raising the pitch an appropriate amount is really important to sustainability, not stretching the guitar string too far, as it were, and just sounding genuine and not making it so hard on yourself.
So we're here, we're actually here at Your Lessons Now studio in Vancouver, and Anna has turned to her piano. So is that your pronoun, she, her?
Yeah.
Okay, Anna has turned to her piano, and so I'm guessing she wants to show us something on the piano.
So masculine voices tend to sit in this like A2 to E3 range. Around there when they speak. Feminine voices tend to sit more so. There's not a huge gap between them. There is a little bit of a gap there, but you don't need to move up your pitch nearly as high as people initially think you do.
So how much of a difference is that? Is that an octave?
Or no, not even close. It's 2 or 3, maybe 4 notes.
Wow. So it's not that far from a masculine voice to a feminine voice.
In terms of pitch, no. In terms of a lot of other things, a lot.
What are some of the other things that people don't know about?
Another thing is going to be resonance. Mm-hmm. When masculine voices speak or sing, they tend to feel a lot of rumble or vibration in their chest because those cavities in your throat and your mouth space are much larger and wider. So the sound bounces around and creates much more of a richness. So we feel a rumble in our chest because of the richness of that sound. If you want to sound more femme, you need to learn to raise your voice box, basically shorten the tube, and then narrow your throat, so also shrink its width, so that there's less space for that sound to bounce around and get rich. You combine the smaller, thinner tube with a slightly higher pitch, you're gonna feel the rumble and the vibration from that voice more in your sinuses and your cheekbones. So if I sing an A3, which is a note in the typical feminine speaking range, with a lot of resonance in my cheeks, you know, a small thin tube, that's what it sounds like. If I open up that space and lengthen the tube, but sing the same note. And again, this is a note that feminine voices speak in. That's how different it can be. Same pitch.
That was the same pitch?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Wow, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. You were saying that there's not even an octave range between a typical feminine voice and a typical masculine voice, but there are other things that make a difference. So one of the things you mentioned was the resonance. And what are some other things that, like, I mean, if people were to come to you, if they wanted to learn more about this, what are some of the things you might talk to them about?
Yeah, so feminine voices tend to stretch and elongate words more. So if you heard someone with a femme voice or wanting to sound femme say the word yeah, they would say, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's very stretched. A masculine voice would say, yeah. It's just very short and clipped. Uh-huh. So stretching words versus chopping them off is another thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. So are these other things that voices do, are they cultural or are they, I guess it doesn't really matter from the point of like really teaching people how to fit in, but are they cultural, do you think?
From anything I've ever seen, these things are universal, but to what extent those things become important or extreme versus understated is dependent on the language and the culture.
Yeah, right. It's just like different kinds of ways that people might speak. Like,
you know, to give an example people might be more familiar with, when you hear feminine voices speak in Spanish, it tends to be a higher pitch than feminine voices in English, and the variation in pitch tends to be quite large by English speaking standards.
Oh yeah, no, I love, my abuela, oh my gosh, my abuela, I loved listening to her speak.
And so if you speak other languages, that's something someone like me needs to keep in mind.
Oh yeah. Oh, this is great. This is great. We need to do a show about gender presentation in different cultures. Yes, exactly.
Frameworks.
Oh my
Absolutely.
Gosh, I totally do.
A lot of the elements are the same, but to what extremes?
Sure.
They show up is what is often different.
Yeah. Do you get much of that when you're teaching? Do you have people come to you from different kind of cultural backgrounds with different sets of expectations?
The things they're looking to do are pretty much always the same.
Uh-huh.
To what extent fits into their cultural context is going to depend. Some languages are more guttural in general, so you might want to move the pitch up, but it might be an even smaller amount than I showed you for like standard American English, or it might be larger than that.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's so interesting.
So, you know, there's the mechanics. We're talking, pitch and then resonance and those things that are the mechanics of making sound. What we've been touching on here are things that aren't necessarily mechanical. They're a stylistic difference. And so in your coaching, I would assume that you focus more on the mechanical aspects of sound of a voice as opposed to speech patterns or some of the things that we've just been talking about. Is that correct?
So,
or do you actually, get into that with some of your clients?
To make those vocal changes require mechanical and technical changes. And then the style is kind of a byproduct of the different mechanics or the different usage. So getting resonance in the cheeks more, that's something you hear stylistically as my voice is brighter and thinner and pingier instead of being very dark and deep sounding. But what I'm mechanically doing is raising the voice box and narrowing the throat versus opening the throat and lowering the voice box for the darker, richer sound. So mechanics affect style.
Okay.
Or showing them what they want to be going for and why. I think the sacrifice is worth it.
Oh, great. Thank you. Again, so today we're talking with Anna Lantry. Anna is a vocal coach at Your Lessons Now, which is a business that she owns in Vancouver, Washington. Anna, I'd like to spend at least a few minutes talking about singing.
Sure.
Because, so now we've had all kinds of people on Transpositive over the years. We've had Transpose on several times. We love getting Transpose on the show. And we love hearing trans folks sing because it's such a liberating act. A lot of trans women, and also I think trans men too, I mean, there's a couple of narratives I hear. One of the narratives I hear from trans men is that when they transition, when trans men transition, like one of the things that they kind of lose is, I'm not sure how to say it, but they lose this this quality of the voice that they had when they were still assumed female, that they can't really replicate in the same way in a masculine voice. And again, I don't have the skills to know what I'm trying to say, but maybe you do. And then the other thing I hear from a lot of trans men is trans women. One of the things I hear from trans women is that there's a real fear of singing in public or singing in groups because they don't know how to sing a female voice, and so it really is a source of great anxiety. So could we talk about singing? Let's talk about singing for a little bit.
Sure.
What do trans folks need to do to be able to sing?
Well, the first question is sing how? What are we singing? Do you want to keep your former voice and those qualities when you sing, or do you want to change how your speech and
let's start with
the singing voice along the same lines.
Okay, so we're just going to be a hypothetical here for a minute. So let's start with folks who are assumed female at birth who transition mm-hmm. to become trans masculine.
Mm-hmm.
I would not imagine, well, I can't really speak for anyone, so because there's lots of folks who are genderqueer in our community, and also lots of folks who are gender non-binary. But if you are on hormones and your voice changes from testosterone, and is it possible for someone who is transmasculine to still sing with the whole vocal range that they had before they transitioned? Is that possible?
No guarantees. And again, going back to my conversation about priorities, is the possibility of your quality or your range changing or being lost from what it was less or more important than the other things you're pursuing by getting that hormone therapy? That's a serious question you need to embark on to find the right answer for you.
Right. Okay, great. So now let's move on to folks who are assigned or who are assumed male at birth and who transition to become trans female, because I think that's something that we're more familiar with. What is it?
I know I am.
Yeah. So yeah. What if someone who is a trans woman wants to say, for instance, one of the things I love about transpose is that transpose is, my understanding is transpose is a pretty non-judgmental space where like people can sing with whatever they're, wherever they're at that they're comfortable with. But I'm wondering, like, there's a lot of places where you can sing in Portland, just even in Portland, Oregon, besides with transpose. I mean, you might want to sing with your church choir.
Oh, yes.
You might want to go sing karaoke. You might just want to sing in your car, you know? And if you're singing, what does it take for someone who is assumed male at birth, who has transitioned, to sing in a female voice? You said it's a lot more work.
It's a lot of work on the same elements as one would work on for feminizing speech, but it's that extrapolated a whole lot further. So when I say that it may take 3 to 6 months of regular lessons and daily practice to get where someone wants with their speech, it could take years for someone to be happy with their singing voice as far as feminizing it and getting good singing technique in general. And I mean, it's going to take years for anyone, whether you change your voice or not. So knowing that singing is going to be a long journey. Now, can you sing in a femme voice having had to work for one? Yeah?
So, like, when I think of singers who go into falsettos, like, first of all, I mean, I think that when, like, in the 60s, one of the things that you really saw shift in the 60s and the early 70s with vocal techniques was that the kind of like the Elvis style of singing, like singing in like a lower octave, really shifted. And you started to find more and more like male singers singing falsettos and singing in higher octaves. And it's like, I mean, so that's just one example, like men could do that. So what's different for trans women who want to sing higher and want to sound good?
So when men sing in their higher register, it's not the same as when women do it, cis or trans. There are differences.
Oh, great. Okay.
So when a man sings in a really high range and goes into that sort of fake girly like, voice, if you will.
Like Aaron Neville, for instance.
That is lighter than what singers do with a femme voice in that same register. The way a woman, cis or trans, would sing in that same register is fuller, and some of those things from feminizing speech come into play too. You hear men sing in a higher range in that sort of quote-unquote fake girly voice, they're still choppy with their words, they strike things more. And those are habitual and behavioral, and you can work on them. So if I sang in the same range with the same vocal register, but I did masculine speech patterns and sang airier versus singing fuller and singing with more feminine speech patterns, that'll probably tip if you perceive that singer to be male or female.
Well, that's amazing. I didn't ask you this before the interview, but I was wondering if you would be able to show us an example of what it's like for a trans woman who's able to sing in like a female voice? Like, would you be willing to perform a song or sing something for us so we can kind of hear what is possible for the female voice in general?
Or at least a few bars, you know?
Well, I guess what I would say then is, are you talking like feminine classical singing, which is one thing, or are you talking feminine like pop singing or jazz or like belting?
Ooh, I would love to hear all four of those.
Okay, so when a femme voice singer learns to sing and belt, it's in a similar range to when a masculine voice singer sings high without going into falsetto. The difference is that it's going to be brighter, it's going to have less weight in it, and again, that tube is going to be a different size, so it's got a different quality. It tends to be more nasal. So, yeah, that's more how a femme voice would sing pop or jazz or spirituals or what have you. Now, a masculine voice can sing in that same range, but they're going to try to open things up more. So again, these will be the same notes, but I'm doing something very different with how I modify my instrument.
Yeah, I can totally hear that.
Yeah, not even the remotely the same person on the same planet in the same universe.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, both were in full voice. Neither of them were in falsetto, quote unquote. And it was the same freaking notes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, when a masculine voice sings in like that higher register, it tends to be like, it's kind of breathy and weak, but strong enough that it is a sustainable, coherent sound. Whereas when a femme voice sings in that same range, it's going to be fuller, even though it's still in that register. So that's more.
Oh, wow.
Bee Gees versus female opera singer.
Uh-huh. Would you be willing to perform a song that you like to sing for the show? Is there?
I never can remember what I want to sing when I get put on the spot.
Oh no, I just put you on the spot. I'm sorry. Well, it's not.
I'll let you know if I think of one
think of
that
one, yeah.
That really does me justice.
Yeah, right. So you say it takes about 3 to 6 months for a trans woman to really get to a place where she might want to be with her singing voice. It's
with
a lot more work.
With speech. 3 to 6 months.
And that was with consistent practice.
Okay.
Yeah.
With speech. Okay, what about with singing? How long does it take?
Probably more like 1 to 2 years.
Wow.
But it depends on what level you want to get to, because
right.
At some point it's the same as a cis person of your gender identity, just wanting to become a better singer and being perceived or sounding like a certain gender or identity is no longer part of the equation because you're past all that.
Okay, great. So how long is it going to take me to sound like Lady Gaga?
Well, sound like Lady Gaga how? Because again, we all have different instruments.
I'm just being obnoxious.
I know.
Sorry.
Just throwing it right back in your face.
Yes, thank you. So we just have a couple of minutes left. This has really been a pleasure. Jean, I've kind of been dominating the last few minutes. Do you have any final questions?
Yes, there's two. Maybe there are more observations, which I would be interested to hear your comments on. First one being that there are surgeries available in places. And you did make a comment earlier around those. And so I'd like to hear your thoughts on those. And secondly, there are an awful lot of YouTube, you know, online, you know, voice pieces out there. And what do you think people should know about those and trying to go the free, cheap, and easy route?
The kid gloves are coming off for these responses.
Oh,
yeah. Well, I figured.
You want to hear it, yeah.
So I think to have an honest conversation about vocal surgery for voice feminization, really the most important things I want to get across is what it will and won't do, and what the risks are and why. And then you can think of if that would be worth it for you or not. So what voice surgery can do is shorten the vocal cords by various means. And that will generally raise your pitch to some degree. How much is extraordinarily variant based on what they're working with, the method used, and the instrument they have to work with. So it can raise pitch, but all those other elements of developing a feminine voice are behavioral. There's no surgery that I know of, besides maybe a lobotomy, that can change your behavior. And I don't recommend it.
No. Yes.
So you would still have to learn that stuff anyway if you didn't already do those things. Maybe because you had strong feminine influences, or because you learned them before you thought about surgery, or I guess if you just got really lucky. So if all you need is a little bit of a boost in pitch, well, yeah, I can do that. What it can also do is cause your voice to be raspy when it wasn't before, have issues with fatigue, have issues with sounding artificial, like we've mentioned Mickey Mouse. Maybe too many shots have been fired at Disney in this interview. Or you can even lose your voice. And the question is, well, why? Usually they're stitching things back together shorter than they were. If there's any unevenness in that, even millimeters, that can affect things not vibrating or slapping each other how they're supposed to. If the lenses in your eye don't line up just right to see something of a certain size at a certain distance, it's blurry. Well, you're basically doing that to your sound now. And it's really hard to get that just right, like perfectly even vocal folds. No discredit to the surgeons on that. That is hard. The other issue is if there's any problems with infection or swelling during healing, that can knock things uneven or not closing properly, which is even worse. Stitches can tear if you cough or sneeze or something at the point in time that you're not supposed to. Again, if they interfered with the vocal cords directly or not, different surgeries and different methods have different means. And so those are real risks. And then during the recovery, you're often unable to talk, sing, scream, cough, sneeze, whatever, for X amount of time. And you've got to think if you can really do that, especially if, say, you have kids or something. So those are all things that I really hope people really consider and are informed about before they decide to go that route. Another one is cost. It's not unusual to spend 10 grand on a surgery like that. And while the trans healthcare coverage on the West Coast, at least, has continually expanded, I'm still not aware of places that cover vocal feminization surgery if you're talking insurance carriers. So that's probably an out-of-pocket expense that equates to a newer car. Versus if you come to someone like me, you might spend a tenth of that. You might, without the risks of losing or screwing up your voice potentially for life. Something to consider.
Okay. What about some of the YouTubers out there? Because I've actually seen some that seem to be pretty knowledgeable.
Sure. So there are knowledgeable teachers out there making content. I like to think that we're among them. The problem with YouTube is how you understand things versus how they explain it may not align. so you don't understand what they're trying to convey, and then it's not useful to you. The biggest issue of all, and I'm talking alarm bells going off, is that you may not understand or do what they're doing because you don't know better. The only way to know if you're doing something right for you is getting real-time feedback from someone who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you. So today we've been talking to Anna Lantry. Anna is the owner of Your Lessons Now here in Vancouver. And Anna is a vocal coach, and she helps transgender people who want to improve their speaking and their singing voices. So it's really been a pleasure talking to you, Anna. If people would like to find out more about you or about your organization, where can they go to find out about that?
They can come visit us here in Vancouver and have a soda with us or something if they want. They can also visit our website, which is yourlessonsnow.com. That's your, Y-O-U-R, lessons with an S, now, N-O-W.com.
Great. Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for taking the time.
Yes.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
It is the KABU Fall Drive, and our theme is the sounds of democracy. KABU is a nonprofit organization. Less than 10% of listeners are members of KABU. KABU is 52 years old and one of the oldest community radio stations in the country and one of the oldest media institutions in Portland. Volunteer powered, we have over 300 volunteers. KABU has trained thousands of people how to make radio, all for free thanks to the support we receive from our members. We're independent, community supported, volunteer powered radio. KABU programming focuses on local communities, artists, activists, people. Again, if you'd like to support us, please visit us at kabu.fm/give or by clicking donate in the mobile app. Mail to KABU at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.